If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Sean Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are just a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I accidentally tried to kick this record. I tried to record the episode we're about to talk about when we were scheduled to record something entirely other than this.
Yeah.
We had a Star Trek Prodigy episode that we needed to record, and I got into the intro, and you just looked at me like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, you prepped for the wrong thing.
I prepped for the wrong thing. I'm sure that if that Prodigy episode is out by the time this airs on our hit new Star Trek podcast, Greatest Trek, it will already be considered legendary.
It's true.
Borders!
You apologized over and over again, and I told you, don't worry about it. Cut it out. I'm right. I feel great. I prepared correctly and came ready to work for once.
Yeah.
And that was the only way I needed to feel about it. I didn't need your guilt.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could say I had a bad moment.
You did. You had a bad podcast moment.
There's something we like to talk about at the beginning of some of these shows, and that's how becoming professional, quote-unquote, comedy podcasters has ruined us for normal life.
That's right. It makes us unfit to be out in the world. As in my first story of having a bad bit moment, Ben.
Wow. Lay it on me, Adam.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment. So my dog's broken dog pussy requires medication.
Yeah.
Daily, twice daily. And I was running low. And I got to get a refill. They'll only give you a month of this stuff for some reason. They won't give you 3 months, which I would love.
Are you ordering from one of these online pet supply companies? Because we found out that we've been overpaying by like 5x for my dog's daily medication when we switched.
Well, I'm going to have to look into that in this case because now I'm paying straight from the vet like a sucker.
Yeah. You might be paying through the nose, my friend.
So I call the dog pharmacist. I'm like, hey, I'm calling to get a refill for my beloved dog, Ripley. Is that something you're able to do? She's like, yeah, you're calling about the phenylpropylamine? And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, phenylpropanolamine. And I said, Proen is the street name, right? And like 2 seconds goes by. And she does a hold the phone away from her head laugh.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
This is a good bit moment, Ben.
Wow.
I totally destroyed her.
You're always doing bits.
Good bit moment. Big laughs all around.
Wow. This never happens.
I know.
Amazing.
I thought I'd surprise you.
Yeah. Boy. I can't even wrap my mind around that bit, Adam, but she liked it.
She did. She really did.
That's great.
I do have a bad bit moment, though.
Okay. All right.
Because let's be honest, I can't just give you a good bit moment and have that be the thing.
No.
Like have that be the reputation that somehow I'm going out in the world being a joy to be around for strangers. That's not the truth.
Yeah.
My very presence can be seen as an inconvenience at best to most people.
You know, just drafting off that idea, my parents were in town. They wanted to do something for my birthday. They offered to send me. And
did I forget about your birthday again?
No, it hasn't happened yet. But they were in town early. They were like, go out to dinner. It's on us. We'll look after the baby. And this was like, this is a great gift.
Wow. Yeah.
We're going to remember this forever. Our first night out without the baby. We go to Musso and Frank, a legendary steakhouse in Hollywood, California.
Wow.
We got there a little bit ahead of our res and went to have a martini at the bar.
Cool.
And the bar was full except for one seat at the very end. And my wife sits down and then I'm standing in like the service area / like near the door to the kitchen for that side of the dining room.
Oh, they hate that.
And I'm just like, this is like a perfect metaphor for my entire life. I always feel like I'm like a little bit in everybody's way.
Yeah.
And like there was one seat, but it should not go to me. It should go to my wife, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And so here I am on my birthday dinner, like having a martini while looking at like the place where they scrape the plates into the garbage.
Here is you on your birthday with the worst setup.
Yeah.
Metaphor.
I think that like, when I think about what a bad bit moment is like, it is like making the essence of that.
Yeah.
Something that everyone is suddenly aware of.
It's true. The more public, the better.
Yeah. So what's your second bad bit, Adam?
It's a little more public than the first. The first was a phone call. This one, aboard a Delta Airlines flight.
Mm.
I'm sitting up front.
Oh.
I've just enjoyed a delicious breakfast, and one of the breakfast items was just a fucking banging banana bread. Like,
dang.
One of the best pieces of banana bread I've ever had.
Wow.
And I made sure to tell the flight attendant how much I liked it. But the way I told the flight attendant how much I liked it was a bad bit moment. I handed my tray back over. I'm a windowman, so I handed my tray over the one person in the aisle.
Right.
The Ben proxy.
Right. Yeah, who were you flying with? I'm a little offended by this.
And I said, this banana bread was great. You make a great banana bread. And the flight attendant looked at me, unsmiling, anti-smiling even, and was like, I didn't make it. Wheeled around and left.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
And it made me feel bad the rest of the flight. Because I was hoping, like, of course they didn't make the banana bread.
Yeah.
You want me to explain the joke? Giving responsibility for the good thing to someone who doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
That's the joke.
When I worked in a restaurant, first day that I worked there, the staff meeting before dinner service,
mm-hmm.
I was being trained. I didn't know my ass from my elbow at this point.
Mm.
The manager of the restaurant fucking lit up the waiters for saying, when they were telling people like what was on the menu that day, saying like, I've got a fillet of fish, I've got a burger, right. I've got...
The possessive form of the menu introduction.
Like, you don't have shit. The chef has that. And really, really lit them up for taking any responsibility for the food at all. I mean, this was a very toxic work environment for a lot of reasons, but I was like, I mean, the guy's got a point. You don't have shit. You didn't cook it.
That is such a semantic copy edit criticism that I can't help but like secretly admire and appreciate it and agree with it.
Yeah, yeah. Guy was a total asshole, but in this one instance, you know, stop clock, he had a good point.
I love arguing semantics.
Hmm. Do you want to see if we get into any semantic debates on today's episode of Star Trek : Voyager?
They're all over the place, Ben, I'm sure. I think we're going to run into many as we describe the characters involved in Star Trek Voyager Season 4, Episode 24, Demon.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning you around.
You watched this episode, right?
I did watch this episode.
Okay.
You must be bucking for a promotion.
Starts with BLT back at work. And I was like, you know what? I bet what they're doing with Roxanne Dawson is bringing her in. They're going to get one scene with her, send her home. She's got a lot on her plate, right? She's been away for two episodes.
Yeah.
And she's back on the show.
Definitely want to frame her with the camera down low, shooting up. Gotta do that.
Yeah, she's all over this episode. She's in it a bunch.
She is.
I was shocked by this. We open on them cutting power. The ship is going gray because the deuterium supplies are running super low. And this is the constant struggle with Voyager. They're not around star bases to resupply all the time. And when they run out of deuterium, they're fucked.
Even at 1/4 impulse, we'll be out of gas inside a week.
I was pretty alarmed at how long they had let themselves go, like how dangerous this situation was. This is like taking a long road trip and leaving the AC on full blast, just kind of white knuckling yourself to your destination those last 20 miles, you know? I think we've all been there.
Sure.
But these are adults in command of a starship. You'd think that they would be more careful about their range. This is range anxiety.
It's range anxiety. It's like, there's that the Big One podcast about what will happen when a huge earthquake hits Los Angeles. And one of the things that I learned from that is never let the tank in your gas-powered car get below 50%.
Yeah.
So you and I are both electric carmen. So mm-hmm. If I'm home, I'm usually plugged in one way or the other. So it's less of a concern with an electric. But yeah, like it definitely like changed the way I think about a car. Like letting it go down to like almost nothing and then refilling seems dangerous, actually.
Yeah, it does. And there is no crew person who expresses this feeling of like, Captain really, really fucking kept driving with the AC on, huh? Like, what in the hell is this? Why are we in this situation? And yeah. It's so dire. Like, they're making decisions based on how little they can travel.
Yeah, they have, like, a very limited amount of range. They can't go at warp to do that, which I guess uses more power than impulse. But, like, also, they don't know even where to look. Like, if we're using the road trip metaphor, there was a turnoff. There was, like, there's a KFC, a McDonald's, and a Wiener Schnitzel.
Right.
And a Chevron station.
Yeah.
Like family road trip centers along the side of the highway. They were at 1/4 of tank and they blew past that. And now it's like 100 miles later and they're like starting to go like, I hope we see another one of those.
I mean, don't you always want to carry enough fuel for the trip back to where you got the fuel last time, at least? That way you're never going to run out.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
But they're not doing that. And it's scary.
It's very scary.
It's so scary that like their rationing of energy is such that they're shutting off power and environmental controls to certain decks. And they're squeezing a bunch of crew people into the same quarters to conserve energy. Like it's that dire.
And it's like, take only what you need to survive if you're getting moved to another deck. And Neelix is catching Tuvok's hands because Neelix is trying to bring a lot of luxury items with him.
What's this?
It's my industrial strength hair dryer. And I can't live without it!
Yeah. His luxury item is a book by Chirex. One of the great breakfast cereals in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell it's Talaxian because it's got an X in it.
Yeah. Why stop Neelix from bringing a book and a blanket? Like, you would think more blankets mean less energy expended to keep Neelix warm.
Yeah, and also, like, I think that they should have shown, like, what everyone else is doing to drive Neelix to try and, you know, invite himself to sleep in Six Bay. Because sleeping in Six Bay seems obvious. There's a bunch of beds in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, let's see the, like, up the long ladder, like, disaster where there's a
cargo bay with straw and animals running around, and that's like where everybody has to sleep, you know?
Your hospitality leaves a hell of a lot to be desired.
Sleeping in Six Bay sounds like a good idea in theory, but I feel like you'd fall off those narrow beds all the time.
Yeah. What you want is like a more of a Star Trek Prodigy bio bed, you know?
You really do. Yeah. Something with some gutters and walls.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
something with a drain.
Something with a drain, something with various orifices, you know, because when you don't have any privacy, sometimes you just want to roll over and comfort yourself.
Do you think they ever thought about something more embarrassing for Neelix? Because you think this is going to get called back, this book. It's not. Neelix describes in great detail the importance of this author.
Right.
But like, it would be great if it were instead like the doc opens the book later and it's like and some like, fucking sex author.
Right. You know? Like a glossy magazine falls out of the middle of the book.
Hello there.
Yeah.
And he looks like lays out to try and like cover it up. No, 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 don't look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. Big, beautiful whiskers.
Oh, Neelix, you're into feet. Not surprising, actually.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, yeah, up on the bridge, Harry is also catching dunks for all the ideas. Like, Tom Paris has this, like, get a bicycle set up in the mess hall and make Harry pedal it idea.
Yeah.
If you think this is a one-off, it is not. This is going to be a running theme in the episode.
Star Trek is so weird because this is an episode about Ensign Kim taking more of the initiative in his life and at work.
Yeah.
And immediately my thought is, an alien has taken control of Ensign Kim. Like, from jump! It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. It's tough when you have a show that's sort of predicated on there not being that much change from episode to episode to, like, do character development.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly he has an ambition?
Yeah.
Since when?
Chakotay goes to the ass lab to tell Seven to shut things down over there. Seven's like, you know, if we're trying to find deuterium and this is the deuterium finding department, maybe we shouldn't shut it down, idiot. And to prove her point, she finds deuterium.
Highly concentrated deuterium.
Bang. Yeah, just then.
Yeah. She's like, I came here to chew gum and find deuterium, and I'm all out of gum.
Yeah. She picks up this deuterium on a demon-class planet. This is the first of many, many, many times this description is leveled at this planet. And Chakotay is, well, that's too bad, because no one's going there. Demon planets suck.
And, and she's like, class why?
Exactly. Yeah, you think a Borgs gives a shit about a demon class planet?
No, that's like the briar patch for them. They love that shit.
Yes. Chakotay's like, we can't go there. It's suicide. And Seven's like, maybe it's worth it. This ship pulls up and it's like,
I mean, they describe. The description is like going into orbit is like way too dangerous by itself. Like even going into orbit of a demon class planet, forbidden, essentially.
Orbit forbidden.
Demoness class forbidden. Yeah, but like they go into orbit and it doesn't really seem to be a problem.
Yeah.
This time.
Seven's confidence in the ass lab, I think, is what makes her a great candidate to kind of lead the mission to capture some of this deuterium and beam it up to the transporter room in kind of a containment device situation.
Because if you could just, like, mining is so much easier if you could just beam the deuterium right up to the ship. Like,
this is white glove mining is what this is, right? Don't even have to touch it.
Yeah, this is the fancy stuff.
Uh-huh.
Instead of black lung, you get white glove lung.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to do it.
Do it. Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
Everything's going fine until it doesn't, though, because they beam the stuff up into the jar.
Mm.
Strangely, this is a jar not next to the warp core.
Yeah, I was a little disoriented. I was like, it seems too dangerous not to put next to the warp core.
Yeah. Yeah, but this thing busts out of its glass jar and rocks the transporter operator behind Zevin. Like, this guy gets the lightning bidet treatment.
Yeah, I've heard that you can get that if you go to Burning Man. Somebody will shock your taint.
Oh, yeah. Anything to get your mind off of the dust going into your eyes, nose, and ears.
The ship keeps getting hit by thermionic discharges. And, you know, we're not physicians here, but I think if you've got a thermionic discharge, you should consult a doctor.
Right. If it's not just urine, but also thermionics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad time.
Thermionics that burn when they come out.
Yeah.
There's a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Harry, Mr. Career Advancement Kim, wants to do an EVA to mine deuterium on the surface.
Right.
We can't let the opportunity slip away without at least trying.
The running joke is go ahead and make Harry do the worst job. So Tom Paris starts celebrating this funny idea and gets to be the pilot on this mission. So turnabout is fair play.
It is weird to see a one pip kind of ordering people around in this scene. And Janeway, to her credit, is like, yeah, go ahead. I mean, it's a bad idea at first until he kind of makes a better case for it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's talking about like, hey, I'm 4 years into my career. I actually have some notches in my belt. I mean, both Delaney sisters, for example.
Yeah.
Not to mention a lot of on-the-job experience.
Yeah. After the McLaughlin group, Paris is asking all the questions we are.
Yeah.
Who is this Harry Kim?
Yeah.
What is his dark secret? Has he been taken over by an alien force?
It didn't seem like you. Good.
Even his walk is different, right? Like he's kind of big dogging it around.
Yeah, swinging the shoulders a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like, you know, I want to start commanding the respect I deserve around here. I'm sick of being Ensign Punching Bag.
Yeah.
And I think this is a fair point. I think that this is kind of overdue in a way.
The scene that really locked it for me was when he took his clarinet to the virtual shredder.
Mm.
Traded it in for a trombone.
Yeah, right.
Now he's got that trombone energy.
Yeah.
Tell me you love jazz.
He's a real tromboner man.
Yeah. Sure is.
He was stating the obvious again.
They're taking a shuttle down. They don't want to risk beaming down. They do like a classic Star Trek shuttle landing where you don't get an exterior shot.
Yeah.
And I was like, why no exterior shot? We got all these fancy render farms now.
Yeah. I mean, the money shots come later in this episode.
They're totally saving it. Yeah. Like, I think that if you show the shuttle landing now, it's not as exciting to see the whole ship landing later.
Yeah. You don't show the whole demon at this point in time. I love how Paris loses attitude control before the shuttle does. That's fun.
Yeah, that's a good bit.
I've been losing attitude control a lot lately.
Yeah, yeah. So they're talking about like what this planet is like. And it's sort of the description that we get of the asteroid in the Michael Bay movie.
In Armageddon. Yeah. The asteroid named Dorothy or Betty. What was it?
Oh.
Named after that guy's ex-wife.
Right.
She's a vicious, life-sucking bitch from which there is no escape.
I just remember the line, like, somebody says something like, you know, worst environment imaginable. That's all you had to say, man. Yeah. And it's like, I think he needed to give you the specifics.
Right.
There's, like, jets of gas coming out everywhere. It's super hot. Paris says that they're going to be human barbecue if their suits fail. And it's like, come on, Paris. You've got to know that barbecue is low and slow and that grilling is about applying high heat directly.
Am I making any sense here?
I'm working with a new grill, Ben. You know I've moved. I think I told you that.
Yeah.
Moved to a new place, and this place came with its own grill. I had to get rid of my old grill in favor of this one, and I cooked a chicken on it last night.
Uh-huh. How'd it go?
Burned it to a crisp.
Oh, no. Have you changed fuels? Is it it's propane, right?
Still propane.
Well, that's great because you can taste the meat and not the heat with propane.
I tell you what.
Yeah.
But it's just got different gas apertures when it's going.
I mean, I did the... When you're cooking, you need to pay attention.
Right.
I was unpacking shit and cooking at the same time. And of course, the chicken caught on fire and I wasn't paying attention to it like an idiot.
Yeah. This is where Hank Hill and I part ways because... you know, he's very much of the, like, you need to pay attention when you're cooking.
Well, you should at least be in the same general vicinity of the cooking, which I wasn't.
I'm a low and slow guy, unlike Tom Paris. I subscribe to the adage, if you're looking, you ain't cooking.
That's kind of sexy sounding.
Yeah.
500 degrees Kelvin is the temperature on this planet.
Yeah.
That is too hot for cooking chicken.
Are we in the Kelvin timeline?
We are now.
Yeah, baby. But we're in first contact spacesuits.
Mm-hmm.
Have we talked about how the little grill under the face mask in these spacesuits is clearly hand drilled and like not that regular?
No.
It looks so bad when you see it in close up because the holes are just like not evenly spaced.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's very distracting to me every time I watch a scene with these things.
It's movie magic, Ben.
Yeah, I guess so.
Some prop designer or costume designer out there is getting really sad listening to you right now.
Yeah, those were countless hours with a Dremel tool.
The conical Dremel.
Yeah.
Or the pyramid Dremel.
Yeah.
That's the one you use, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We all worship the pyramid Dremel. I like the planet set, though. It's like, yeah. It's a pretty advanced Star Trek cave set with some pretty deep vistas. Like, we don't feel like we're, you know, right up against the psych the way we do in so many TNG away missions.
Season one TNG dreams of an away team that looks like this.
And the viscous metal that they find in pools all over the place looks really cool.
Maybe it's just because I've been doing this a lot, but it looks like spilled paint to me. Spilled silver paint that hasn't been mixed.
There's some weird like CG mixed with practical stuff that's like kind of surprisingly good in this episode too.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Because like Harry's crouching over one of these pools and he's like, cool, I'm like, there's deuterium in this. And Tom Paris is like, I'm going to go over here and do something else. And it's like, have you guys not seen one horror movie? Like, don't split up.
When they do split up and Paris is across the way doing his own thing, he tells a joke and he gets a very Adam-style reaction to that joke, which is nothing. And that's how he knows something is wrong with Ensign Kim.
Yeah, Ensign Kim, a known easy laugh. And when Tom turns around, Ensign Kim is nowhere to be found. And he reaches into the pool, and there's some, like, CG rippling of the water.
I was so surprised that Kim had been armist by this thing.
Yeah, he got sucked right in.
Yeah. And when he gets pulled out, there's none of this crud on his costume.
You fall into some crud or something?
Yeah, it just like disappears.
This is why it had to be CG. You can't get this costume dirty.
Imagine a metal Armus. Armus was bad enough made out of tar.
No redeeming qualities.
This would be metal, a skin of metal evil.
Could Armus be assimilated?
Wow, that's a great question. Where would you even put the tubules on Armus?
I think you'd have to... Like, there's an episode of the hit Star Trek podcast, Greatest Trek, about an episode of Prodigy where Zero gets assimilated.
Yeah.
Zero is, like, in a container.
Right.
If you could put Armus in a container and then assimilate the container, maybe that's how you do it.
Maybe that's why Armus wanted that shuttlecraft.
Right.
Because he wanted to go get assimilated.
I'm not taking you anywhere.
I mean, if he can't be... That makes him an interesting guy, just sort of out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Immune.
Yeah.
Due to being such a worthless piece of shit.
Yeah.
Captain,
Tom is trying to rescue Harry, trying to get him back to the shuttle. Harry's oxygen has been compromised, so they don't have much time. We see some of this goo go into Tom's suit, and then he's compromised also.
Yeah. These scenes happen so quickly, though, right? And they're so darkly lit that I had to back this up a couple of times to make sure I was seeing what I was seeing.
Yeah. And pretty quickly, like, they're both unable to breathe, and they, like, collapse in a tunnel face down on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
RSVP Tom and Harry.
Yeah. It's too bad, too, because it feels like Kim was really coming into his own as a character with the confidence and so forth.
Right. This is really sad, but I'd like to cut back to the comedic B story of Neelix pushing for getting to have a bed in Six Bay.
Right. The deaths of two beloved characters and the scene that follows.
Yeah. I guess it serves to underline how oblivious everyone on the ship is to what has happened to Tom and Harry, because they're out of communication and just hoping that that goes well. Neelix is Neelixing around in Six Bay and pissing off the EMH, who feels very imposed upon.
Where are we supposed to sleep? Anywhere but here. This is a sick bay, not a dormitory.
Interesting strategy by Neelix to not look out for himself and his own bio bed and instead bring some hangers on into the moment. This is the part where I was like, oh, I wouldn't have done that. Like, if you want to get an easy yes, it's easier to get a yes when it's just you instead of like, hey, can I also invite four other people into VIP with me?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe what he did was like pick the crew members that he knew don't snore.
Yeah.
You know, like the request has more strength if there's a bunch of us that want it.
Right.
And also I could, if you know, if I pick my group, I know I'll get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he's thinking.
One of the dudes should have been the lightning bidet guy. Like, look, this guy was just here. We could just stick him back in the bed where he was.
We haven't even changed the sheet of paper that we pull down over the bed to, you know, make it seem like it's clean in between patients.
Well, you could just stick me back in the iron lung bed. I spent quite a bunch of time there.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead and replicate me a lung while you're at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why haven't you done that already?
So Chakotay is trying to, like, keep the peace here. God, what a fucking shitty job.
You wanted to see me, Doctor?
Oh, it's about time. Mr. Neelix is attempting to turn my sickbay into a flophouse.
Feels like the Chakotay stock has been not great over the course of this season, right? Season 4, not a great Chakotay season.
Yeah, but doesn't it seem like the EMH would be a pretty big power suck? And couldn't you... If you just had him on the mobile emitter and were only turning him on as needed to save the mobile emitter's battery, isn't that the way? Isn't that the way to save a bunch of energy?
I mean, they started treating him like a person, and all of a sudden you got to make sacrifices.
You give a hologram a cookie.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, the doc's pushback is what's ridiculous here. Like, the doc could have very real reasons for not having people in there, but his reasons are stupid. He likes to sing and he likes to stay up late at night, even though the idea of night to a hologram person shouldn't make any sense at all.
Night is a social construct.
Yeah. The very time of day is racist, Ben.
So that's going on. Chakotay's trying to make them see eye to eye when he gets called up to the bridge, and Janeway is really worried about the lack of communications with their away team and has decided to put everyone else in danger also. She wants to go to Blue Alert.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a weird raising of the stakes because Chakotay is like, look, I got to go down there and save him. And Janeway is like, no, you're too high a value to lose.
She's like, I've seen what you do to shuttles.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're pot committed at this point to taking the ship down.
Let us down easy, Commander.
Sounds great.
This is the scene. They kept their special effects powder dry at the beginning of the episode for this sequence because it is like, I feel like the second time we saw them land the ship, they reused a lot of the same effects shots as the first time they land the ship in this series. But this is like a whole new suite of effects shots. It looks awesome. It looks dangerous. You know, like, I feel like the demon class's danger has been overstated at this point if they feel like it's a good gamble to land the ship on it.
Yeah.
Like, how is a planet that is dangerous to even go in orbit of safe enough to land on?
It's nuts. I mean, the bangers are hitting them hard. The shields are crashing. Finally, they land.
Brace for impact.
Yeah, and it's like the damage report is we're not getting off the surface anytime soon.
This is like the hard landing in a commercial aircraft that like sends the plane into the hangar for a while.
Right, right. Yeah, the we're going to have to replace the gear to make this thing airworthy again. What a gamble, right? Like they absolutely have to leave this planet with deuterium now.
Yeah.
BLT walks back into the episode. She's not on maternity leave at all.
Nope.
She's not in the office for one day. She's like, I want to go on the adventure. Like, put me in, coach.
Right, and immediately gets sidelined, though. She's ready to play in the game, but Chakotay goes, no way.
You think I can control myself?
I think you're a little too close to this.
You're damn right I am.
This planet is 500 degrees Kelvin. We don't need somebody that's already hot-headed out there.
Mm. You can't even regulate your own temperature. You think you're going to be comfortable out there?
Yeah. So it's a no. And then, like, people are just trying to sleep in Six Bay and the EMH is being a total bastard to them.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, if there is a way that you can aggressively do chores, that's what the doc is doing.
Oh, that's the only way I do chores.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this. I don't want to take the garbage cans out.
Yeah, this is a passive-aggressive measuring contest that it seems like the doc is going to win.
I mean, it does seem like that at the beginning, but Neelix is like, you think you're annoying?
How about a sing-along?
Neelix is great at taking something that you enjoy and making that unenjoyable by volume.
Yeah, right.
Hey, I heard you like singing.
Yeah.
How about we do some singing on top of your singing?
Yeah, he's the exhibit of this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, we cut back to the away team, and they're like, stomping around on the planet surface looking for everyone. I was shocked that Tom and Harry just left the back of their shuttle open.
I thought the same thing. Like, can you imagine how hot the upholstery is if it's been baking in 500 Kelvin heat?
Oh, man. That's like, getting into a Camaro's and like sitting with short shorts on the Naugahyde.
Yeah, this is no good.
That's not good. It seems like every time somebody touches the liquid in these pools, something bad happens. And Seven comes really close. It's one of those, like, is she going to do it? Is she going to do it?
Yeah.
Oh.
There's an insanity to this moment because Seven and Chakotay are on a search and rescue mission. But Seven sees the deuterium and is like, oh, I better go get a sample of that. It's like going on a search and rescue mission after an avalanche, but getting into a snowball fight before you find the people buried.
Yeah.
We'll collect the deuterium later.
As you wish.
First things first, Seven.
Yeah.
We have established that this planet has deuterium.
Yeah, we know. It's okay.
They keep moving. They're still looking for Tom and Harry. Chakotay almost becomes a cliff kid.
Yeah.
It was very scary to see that.
Yeah. The ledge gives way and Seven starts to pull him up with the help of Tom Paris.
And Tom Paris is not in his spacesuit. He's just in his regular ass uniform. He's become demon compatible.
He's raw dogged the pull up. Because you see like the gloved hand of a Seven help Chakotay, but then you see the nude hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of the Paris.
Paris is hitting it raw.
Yeah. He's feeling everything.
Mm-hmm. It's what he's wanted all along.
Yeah.
He had to learn from Harry how to do this.
I know.
You know?
Our course is locked in.
Do it.
Listen to me very carefully because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
After the commercial, Paris explains just how great it is to not wear a suit out here. It's wonderful.
It's like when you're a kid who's afraid of the water and you suddenly realize that you can swim.
I feel great. I've never breathed air this fresh. Anyways, come deeper into the cave. I found a ton of deuterium back there. And I was like, okay, this is evil Paris, like luring them to their certain deaths.
If he were a little more chilled out about how pleasurable it was to not wear a suit, I'd be ready to fall for this.
Yeah.
But like, he is so hyped up. Like he's a raver kid about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever fucked breathing demon atmosphere?
He's like doing digits, finger dancing and like messing around with a glow stick. And he's like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You have to try it.
And the story he tells about how he ended up where he was just does not make any sense at all. He's like, so I passed out and then I woke up and then I was breathing and I wasn't wearing a suit and I don't know where the suit is, but this planet is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. cool story, man. So you you took your rubber off. You don't know when.
It's fine. There's a mania to Paris that is reflected by Chakotay in like a totally stoic Chakotay way that right. is really funny to me.
Go ahead. Take your helmets off. Try it.
I'm glad you're feeling all right. But none of us should be taking any risks until we know exactly what's going on.
So many science fiction things have been about, like, the taking the helmet off was a mistake.
Yeah.
And I like seeing Chakotay stick to his guns here.
I know. So the actor who plays Vorik got the haircut. You need to stick him in this episode.
Yeah.
So he gets an interstitial here that serves to tell the viewer how little time we have left before the ship loses power altogether. It's 2 hours.
I couldn't believe we got Vorik. I feel like it's been a season since we've seen Vorik.
I wonder if production-wise, you get Vorik on the on-deck circle in case Roxanne Dawson's recovery takes longer, and
that's
then you make Vorik the engineer of the episode.
Right.
For storytelling purposes.
Yeah. I think she's doing really good subtle stuff, because when he walks up to her and says lieutenant, she's like, huh. Yeah.
She doesn't even look at him.
Yeah, she's, instead of looking at him, she just kicks him like a horse. She just doesn't even turn around. She just kicks out behind her, right in the nuts.
Yeah,
indeed.
They really cut it close on the power situation, but they're getting everything back working. You know, like they're gonna have transporters, which will be good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're gonna need some deuterium really soon.
Right, back on the planet where the deuterium is, Paris has led Chakotay and Seven to where Kim is, and Kim is also not wearing an environmental suit. And he is, if you can believe it, even more euphoric than Paris about this circumstance.
He fucking loves it down here. And he's like, you guys don't know what you're missing. You gotta try it.
Commander, isn't it incredible? That's what I've been trying to tell him.
I think everyone has felt like Chakotay and Seven before. Like being the late attendees to a party after everyone is pretty smashed. And like knowing you need to catch up, but maybe it's just too late to catch up. Maybe right. You shouldn't even start.
You're not going to get into that headspace, and you're going to be too tired. Like by the time you're getting drunk, you're also going to need to sleep.
Yeah. And there's kind of a tediousness to Kim and Paris. Like just being around them is like, all right, I get it. Maybe coming to this party wasn't a good idea anyway. Maybe I'm just not in the mood.
Yeah.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, but we're going back to Voyager now.
So they convince them like, hey, like let's take some of this deuterium and beam back to the ship now that the transporters are back working. And they materialize on the transporter pad, and Tom and Harry immediately are not doing well.
Yeah. The air on the ship hits really hard. And they start coughing, which is only going to get them super high.
Yeah, the harder you cough, right? Yeah. And it's like these guys have never hit a bong before, man.
Slowly in and out.
Yeah, I mean, they're beamed directly to Six Bay afterwards, and the doc puts them behind a force field and fills that area with demon air.
Yeah, pretty quick thinking by the doc. Mm-hmm. And pretty quick, like, formulation of a theory, which is that if terraforming a planet is making it habitable to human life, bioforming a person is a planet making the person compatible with the planet.
Yeah.
So they've been bioformed is the working theory here.
What a concept.
And they're no longer able to live in an environment like Voyager. They have to live in a demon environment. And so Harry is like, hey man, like send me back in the game, coach.
Yeah, he's like, are you saying that we need to go back down there to live? Because, okay.
I kind of like that Tom gets stuck not getting to go back.
Kim is outranked by Tom. I'm shocked at the number of times this episode Paris doesn't pull rank on him.
Yeah, that seems to be sort of an unspoken thing about their relationship, is like they're such good friends that they kind of don't observe rank around each other.
That's nice.
Like Harry doesn't have to call Tom sir at work or anything.
I like that.
That's good. That's a classy move by Tom.
On the planet, Seven, Chakotay, and Demon Kim are walking around, and Kim appears to be seeing a planet that no one else is. Like, he has seen the demon planet after it's taken off its glasses and shaken off its hair.
Mm, yeah.
And has, like, walked down the steps to prom.
Right.
And this planet's looking good to Kim.
I think it's breathtaking.
Breathtaking.
Yes.
Chakotay and Seven just can't see it because they're like, but the planet's hair is in a bun.
Yeah.
And it's wearing like coveralls that have a little bit of paint on it because it's so artsy.
Yeah.
How could you think that this planet is hot?
This planet is never going to win Homecoming Queen. Not if we have anything to say about it.
Kim is like, I bet you this planet can. And that the fact that it was a bet becomes a big problem a little bit later on.
My bet? Am I a bet? Am I a fucking bet?
Seven picks up some humanoid life signs not far away. And that's interesting. Who else is on this planet?
It's a, hey, let's go find out what that is. Because, you know, I mean, like, you got to be careful in any Star Trek context that you might be violating the Prime Directive.
Yeah.
And if they're mining somebody's planet unknowingly, that would be bad.
It would be. Yeah.
So they head off, and in the science lab, the captain and BLT are working on a sample of this deuterium goo, and some of it touches BLT and forms a perfect thumb.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Founder goo.
It is.
Except silver, not gold.
Do they keep the thumb? Like, we don't follow up with the thumb later. And I think if you're BLT, you got to hold on to that thing.
Yeah. Put it under glass. Or maybe in the end, like, they have to leave it because, you know, it'd be cruel or whatever. But, back on the planet, Harry finds his own dead body.
This is such a trip. This is very Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah. Tom and Harry are in their spacesuits where we last saw them.
They have been found face down, at least.
Right.
Which, to some cultures, is the best way to die.
Chakotay is so relieved about this.
Yeah. Kim and Paris have not gone to the hereafter, though.
No.
They're alive.
How are they alive? Their suits were running out of air.
It's explained away very weakly that, like, even though you run out of air in a spacesuit, there is some minimal life-saving things these EV suits can do.
Wow.
I don't know. yeah. I've got a question about Star Trek Voyager Season 4, Episode 24, Demons. You got two crew people wearing environmental suits made out of Dremels, and you expect me to believe that once they run out of air, there's some other system that keeps the birdies alive?
A demon-class planet is not something we've heard of previously in the canon. I noticed they were laying face down. Did you ever think of it calling it a Crady Beast-class planet?
Get a light!
I've got to get that
latinum.
Put your latinum where your mouth is. I've got to get that
latinum.
Not if you've just drunk gold.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology, with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for him. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura Frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura Frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura Frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Outside of Voyager, a pool of spilled silver paint grows.
Yeah. It's got sort of like quicksand energy because the ship is like slowly sinking in it.
Yeah.
And this is just heightening, you know, the danger to the ship. We need to get some deuterium on board quick, fast thing seems to have sort of gotten solved. But now the planet is like consuming the entire ship with this goo.
The ship is clearly sad, and that's why it's sinking into this mud.
Mm. You hate to see that happen to a starship in the prime of its life.
I know. This is a real Artax problem here with the ship. Got to figure it out.
Everyone knew that whoever let the sadness overtake him would sink into the swamp.
Kim and Paris are still alive. And when Chakotay asks for the beam back to Six Bay for five people.
Five?
I can't explain it.
The unsuited Kim, the demon Kim, if you will, starts to freak out.
Yeah.
He does not want to go and he runs away.
He runs away. He doesn't want to go back.
Yeah. It seems like a dangerous place to even walk with like any sort of speed.
Yeah.
You want to be careful.
Right. There's little jets of steam coming out everywhere.
Yeah.
There's thermionic discharges.
The reason this is such a crucial moment is because the Voyager's in a hurry. They need to take off.
Yeah.
They are sinking at such a speed that they can't wait for Demon Kim. They got to leave him down there.
There's coffee in getting off this planet.
That was like discussed like when they first filled the volume of force-fielded Six Bay with gas that like, oh my God, like we might have to leave Tom and Harry here because this is the only place they can survive now.
Yeah.
And that was met with some like despair, but now it's like all Kim wants. And when they're talking about, hey, we gotta take off, Tom Paris is like pacing back and forth in Six Bay, like, I don't fucking want to do it, man. Don't take me with you.
The idea of being left on a planet is a concept we've seen before with Chakotay and Janeway.
Right. But and Tom's not going to make Harry a bathtub.
Not only that, we know how weak those shelters are in like just a standard issue storm.
Right.
Those things aren't going to hold up on a demon class planet.
Starfleet doesn't make a demon class shelter.
Yeah.
They make bullshit shelters for M class planets.
The ship is having a hard time getting out of the mud here. And the thrusters are clearly not enough to get them up. Something is restraining them. It's not just about the sink. It's that something is grabbing them and holding them.
They're stuck in the metal mud. And the captain is like on the radio with Demon Kim saying like, you know that this is like a huge problem for us. And Tom and Kim are both saying like, yeah, like, I, like we don't get it either. Like, we don't know why there's other copies of us that aren't like this.
This is one of those moments where Janeway knows the score and does not share that score with anyone else, because her conversation with Kim reveals that her hunch is true, that there's some sort of connection between Kim and the spilled paint. And maybe one way to get leverage is to shoot the ship's phasers at the paint.
Yeah. The theory has gone from they've been bioformed to there's something else going on. Yeah. Maybe they're like some kind of duplers.
Yeah.
So maybe we like try to embarrass them or, you know, compliment them really sincerely or something.
Harry, you have chosen the clarinet. Why? Of all the instruments.
One of the Delaney sisters said that you finished a little faster than she would have hoped. The other one was very satisfied.
Most people stopped having that haircut a couple of years ago. And look at you, holding on, because you're afraid to try new things.
They start talking about the paint as silver blood.
Yeah.
And what we come to understand through, like, they get, like, Demon Kim up on the transporter pad so that there can be a face-to-face conversation between him and the captain. And it's like, yeah, like there's this like complex material that had like instinct or something, but not intelligence. And interacting with an intelligence showed the silver blood that there was something called intelligence that was possible. And it spontaneously started doing it. Like it catalyzed the silver blood to do its own intelligence. But it's like, I want more. Like I want everybody on the ship to give me some of their intelligence.
It's like a neutral Armus, right? When the D found Armus, they were already fully evil and, you know, able to experience what it's like to have a form of sentience.
Mm-hmm.
But this neutral Armus had no idea what it would be like to have these kind of thoughts or become a person in the way that they became by becoming Kim in Paris.
Yeah, it wasn't dank and vile. It was kind of like neutral and fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, any more neutral and fine is like the best you can do, right?
Kind of appreciate it.
Yeah.
So there's sort of like this weird moment of this almost becomes transactional where Janeway realizes like, oh, well, I can get as much deuterium as I'm ever going to need from this guy that thinks he's Harry Kim if I just give DNA samples of my entire crew to him.
But also, while holding the ship's phaser banks to the paint's head here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit under duress, but also she gives the silver blood exactly what it wants.
Yeah.
You want to duplicate the rest of this crew and populate this planet.
And like, it happens really fast. Like the end of this episode is bug nuts to me. Like just how swiftly this becomes the plan and like how there isn't like a all hands meeting where she pitches this to the crew. Nobody gets to vote on it.
Well, I interpreted it as a voluntary thing, like meet in the cargo bay and I'll pitch you this idea.
Yeah, I guess so. But like, I mean, it looked like the whole crew standing on the surface.
It looked like a lot of people. And you're right. The abruptness of not just the conclusion of the episode, but the solution to the problem in proximity to its conclusion.
Yeah.
Was unusual.
The resolution of the episode is sort of elliptical, and you just realize that a lot of people did this because with the closing credits coming up on the screen, a shot of Voyager taking off while a couple hundred crew people mill around on the surface.
It's a Tom Riker problem because they've made 100 Thomas Rikers they and just have. Left them behind.
And like 100 Thomas Rikers with the full diversity of kinds of expertise that you would have in Star Trek. So these are people that know how to like create technology and do things.
Yeah.
And like the implications of this are fucking bonkers. There's a planet with an entire starship crew that like breathe a different atmosphere that they just left behind.
The thing about Euphoria is that it eventually fades. What happens 2 weeks from now? Where they're like, cool, we're in a beautiful place. What do we do?
Yeah, like, are they bored at a certain point? Like, there's no, like, other stimulus. Like, they didn't leave a computer set behind with a bunch of movies and stuff for them to do.
It's unclear whether anything at all was left with them besides, like, the occasional round pelican case on a strap.
Yeah.
I like the one person waving.
Yeah, that person actually used to work at a Utopia Planitia shipyard and used to wave to the starships as they pulled out of space dock.
I'm going to set up a jewelry exchange.
Did you like this very weird episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
I liked a couple of parts of it. I liked the great spin on the Star Trek Caves playset. Like, this is a promotion for the Star Trek Caves. Like, We can do this now in a really fun way.
Yeah.
Great Caves episode.
Great Caves episode.
Bad Janeway episode.
Really bad Janeway episode.
Because I think the buck stops with you. Like, you're the driver on the road trip, and it's up to you to figure out where and when to stop to make sure you're not pulled over on the side of the road with a hood up.
Right.
Bad planning, Janeway. Not good.
Without gasoline, we can't get the DeLorean up to 88 miles per hour.
And finally, the absurdity of the copied crew left behind. I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of, like, is this a story that's like, the faster we get out of this and into the credits, if we don't give a viewer any time to think about this, they will not consider how ridiculous this choice is. Because this, the end of this episode is double middle fingers to the Thomas Riker episode in TNG. This is like, you didn't have to make a whole episode about this. You didn't have to talk about the morality of a copy or anything.
Yeah.
I thought if one thing were clear by now, said you and I play things a little differently.
Like, you can just make copies and leave them behind.
It's so wild.
And also, where's the thumb?
Yeah.
Where's BLT's thumb?
So that's presumably like a, like, hey, we're going to need the thumb also, because before you came, the Silver Blood was, you know, entirely instinct-based, but when it realized it could do thumb, you know, it had to do thumb.
I mean, it did, when it went into the spacesuit, when it went into Paris's leg, pretty high up on the leg, right?
Yeah, and it was just a little sample. It could have created anything.
Just a single bagged testicle.
Just rolling around.
Rolling around on a dirty planet.
Yeah.
Ben, what about you?
I kind of love this episode.
Yeah.
I love how just unrestrained and mad it is. It seems so wild to me that they left a planet behind with an entire crew. Like, boy, do you think Star Trek Prodigy could do something with this? Like, is this ever going to get called back in any Star Trek timeline? Like,
it's right there.
It is so interesting. It is such a pregnant ending.
Also, wouldn't you like to know who chose to volunteer their DNA versus who didn't?
Yeah.
Like, did the captain?
Yeah, because if she did, maybe, you know what? I bet they had to restrict it. Well, no, because I was thinking, like, the captain couldn't, because then Omega is something that these people are aware of. But she told the whole senior staff about Omega, so
they all know.
It doesn't matter, because the first two people that got Silver Blood assimilated are Tom and Harry. That's another question. Did they get seven? Is there a Silver Blood Borg? Could the Borgs assimilate Silver Bloods? All of these questions are things I'm curious about.
Is there slash fiction of Demon Chakotay and Demon Janeway getting down.
Yeah, yeah. She's taking a bath in like methane or something, you know, something crazy because it's a Y-class
planet. How do you build a bathtub for this stuff?
I don't know. It just goes right through spacesuits. It'd probably go right through a rock bathtub.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, what a crazy episode. Let's see if we have anything in the Priority One inbox, Adam. What do you say?
Nothing in our P1 inbox will be as crazy as this episode. That's what I think.
You're probably right.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we've got a couple of P1s here. The first one is of a personal nature, and it is from Jason, that guy 42. It's to Ben, Adam, and Friends of DeSoto on GWJ. Goes like this. Hey, Ben and Adam, I was drunk when I bought this. I don't remember buying it. Maybe throw a Kern drop and voice here?
You don't remember buying this P1, but I don't remember anything. It's not the same.
Do you ever wake up with an empty wallet? I do every day.
It goes on to say, but Max Fun reached out and told me to submit a message. So,
wow, that's nice.
So let me just say that I love you. I love the pod. And shout out to all the Friends of DeSoto on gamerswithjobs.com. Cheers. P.S., how about a Ro Laren drop? Because I love it. Well, we can do that for you, that guy 42. I love the idea that guy 42 made a P1, paid for it, and then didn't fill out the form.
That should tell you everything you need to know about the Maximum Fun Network. Like,
they're not going to do you dirty like that.
They will find your wallet and take it to the lost and found. Yeah. That's what this is.
It really is. Hey, did anyone lose $100?
Ben, our second Priority One message is from Tyler, and it is to Ben and Adam. The message goes like this. I was indignant and shook when I heard that heinous glitter bomb crook. But Adam and Ben, he'll have to contend with a phaser in hand or airy Dorothy's friend. Glitter you may find, the remnant left behind, but far more bright your stars have always shined. Thank you, too, for all you do, and don't let morons make you blue.
Thank you, Tyler. That was a lovely bit of verse, and a lovely rendition of that verse by you, Adam.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt a little off.
I think you've got a beautiful voice for poetry. You should slam sometime.
Mm.
The more I've thought about it, the more I think it was just a bad bit moment, and who are we to get especially mad at anyone else for having a bad bit moment?
I don't think it was a bad bit moment. I think it was mean and bad.
Wow. Well, that's where we part ways.
We're at glitterheads on this, man.
I guess we are, yeah.
But a nice message here of support from the many Friends of DeSoto.
Yeah, I've appreciated all of them. If you'd like to say something to us, whether you're drunk, sober, or outraged about glitter, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and set it up today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Gotta give it to Janeway this episode. I think the episode may sell her short in how, like, it sort of felt like the episode ran out of time to let her process the fullness of the of the ask that the Silverblood demon Kim was making.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the just staggeringly quick turnaround from figuring out what was going on to leaving the planet with her entire crew replicated, being left behind, just seemed like a really surprising choice for the commander of a ship to make. And I mean, that coupled with the, hey, we're running out of gas in the middle of the highway energy at the beginning of the episode was just no good looks in this episode for Janeway.
Yeah.
And yeah, do the people that they leave, like they have the consciousnesses and memories and stuff of the people that they replicate. Do they want to go home? Or is that like the one thing that's different about them is that they love Demon Planet and they want to stay there?
That's one aspect to this story that is not super clear to me. Like by portraying Kim and Paris's feelings toward the planet the way that they do, is that suggesting that those feelings supersede all other feelings that these copies have?
Yeah. I guess.
I don't know. I'm going to make my Shimoda BLT.
Okay.
Because there is a missing scene in this episode. And that scene is BLT going to visit Demon Paris in the Six Bay.
Why didn't she do that?
She never does.
Yeah.
And I think we can guess why that doesn't happen for production reasons. Maybe Roxanne Dawson is on light duty.
Yeah.
But that is a pretty glaring omission as characters go.
Yeah.
And you do get the scene where BLT tells Chakotay, you know, you better bring back my boy. Bring a fucking badass with you to help. But that there is no shared scene between them, I don't know. It just felt like there was a big hole in the story. One of many holes unfilled this episode. And for that reason, she's going to be my drunk Shimoda.
Wow. Good Shimoda. What a weird episode.
Yeah.
Adam, were we supposed to do this episode in a particular way?
God, I hope not.
No, we were on a regular square. We were on square 25, but let's find out if we have to do the next episode in a particular way. That would be interesting.
To find out, we're going to gach.biz/game, where the game of buttholes, Will of the Caretaker, awaits.
The next episode is season 4, episode 25. One. Seven must deal with an almost complete solitude when the crew must go into protective stasis for a month in order to cross a dangerous nebula. Wow. Sort of reminds me of Prometheus, the robot character that stays awake the entire time.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, that'll be next week. As I mentioned, we are on square 25. We do have a Naked Now square that we could hit out in front of us there. I know that would be a big thrill for you, Adam.
Famously, that is my exit ramp from the show.
That's where you get off?
Yeah.
That's where Adam stops being a part of the show.
Yeah.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right. Gonna go ahead and roll this bone. Wish me luck. I've rolled a one, Adam.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
So we're on square 26. The Naked Now remains a hazard.
You're going to make me roll it. The ultimate indignity.
Well, next week we will be reviewing One in a normal way.
Looking forward to that.
If you can call this show normal.
It's definitely not. One way that distinguishes our show from the other Miriam Star Trek shows out there. The great amount of support we receive from the Friends of DeSoto.
That's true.
It's the reason we continue to exist. Financial support.
Financial support. If you got $5 a month and you appreciate this show, head to MaximumFun.org/join. Get signed up today and you'll get immediate access to our monthly bonus episodes behind the paywall there. And we really, really appreciate it. How this whole thing gets to keep on going.
$5. That's it. $5 a month.
You're not going to miss that.
Do it.
We got to thank our producer, Wendy Pretty, who makes this all run as smoothly as it does. She does great work on the edits and great work on herding the cats that are Ben and Adam. And we really appreciate her. We also appreciate Bill Tilly, the card daddy, who runs the @GreatestTrek social media accounts. Give those a follow. They're really fun.
Yeah, @GreatestTrek on Twitter, @GreatestTrek on Instagram.
Yeah, join a community of Friends of DeSoto. There's a great big one on Facebook, one on Reddit, one on drunkshimoda.com Discord server.
Yeah, you were just over there yesterday.
Yeah, I was hanging out on the Discord the other day, just cutting it up. You can do this too from time to time. Just pop over there, hang out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will ask questions and stuff, but mostly it's just a joke around. Let's have fun.
I'm going to get on a flight in a few days. Maybe that's what I'll do while I'm on the plane.
I like that idea. We got to thank Nick Ditmore, who made our show art. Got to thank Adam Ragusea, who made the original Janeway song, working on the inspiration of Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song. Follow Adam Ragusea all over the internet. He's making great cooking videos and a great podcast, largely about cooking, but also about how weird it is to be like a suddenly YouTube famous dude when he was just like minding his own business being a college professor before.
He's a very thoughtful dude. I like listening to him.
Yeah, me too. Well, with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that's a lot like Prometheus in that there's the robot that stays awake for the journey, but then also there's people taking off their helmets at inopportune moments. Yeah.
Don't like that.
It's like, what is this, Demon 2?
Yeah, it is. It's very Demon 2, because Paris and Kim did that this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Prometheus is basically just a ripoff of these two episodes, right?
Yeah, clearly.
Clearly. Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.